This is Sober Reference. You're listening to a sober story, digestible conversations filled with evidence that you can do anything without picking up a drink. We share more cost-free resources on our website, www.soberreference.com, and hope you'll connect with us on social media. Search Sober Reference now and look for our logo. For more information about today's guest, visit our show notes. We hope you find this content valuable and leave feeling inspired to drink less, live more, and meet your potential. Enjoy. All right, let's go ahead and get started. I wanted you to introduce yourself. So how would you like our community to know you?
I'm Stephanie Graves. I'm an alcoholic and addict that has worked on my recovery for 13 years. I've worked on it longer than that, but I've worked on it clean and sober for 13 years. And yeah, I love talking about sobriety, and I want to help as many people as I can to walk this path and just be their best, amazing self. So that's it.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Shining example that it's possible and of what it can be like.
Yeah.
What are you grateful for today?
I am grateful for sober vacations. That's one of my favorite things. Just going new places, exploring, meeting new people. I am grateful for my boyfriend and my two cats. Those are like my little daily gratitude is my little family. So yeah, those are a couple of things I'm like super grateful for today.
I love that. So with your boyfriend and the two cats, because that's true in your life, right? Because you are surrounded by these relationships, what is an I am statement that you can affirm about yourself because those are true? Because you have
my relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. Because those things are present in your life.
I am loving. I would say I am a loving person.
Yeah.
At my essence. I'm not always a loving person, but let's be real. But in my core of like my being, that's what I want to do and be.
You get to experience that in those relationships.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Okay, so you got sober when you were 23.
Yeah.
You're now 13 years sober.
Right.
And so you have a lot of evidence of what it's actually like to be sober in your 20s and beyond. Yeah. Before we get to the, you know, beyond, what did a drink give you in your late teens and your early 20s?
Oh my God. It was like a relief. It was just like a relief of severe social anxiety on like another level that I like couldn't handle it. And just feeling like imposter syndrome too. Cause when I didn't start till I was 18 either. So I had actually a really short but turbulent drinking career. But yeah, when I went off to college, I just felt like not cool. And I was hanging out with people I thought were cool and didn't know why they wanted to hang out with me. So it was like, if I drank, it made me feel more comfortable to do that, to like hang out with people and that had been like partying their whole, you know, like people that were not like nerdy in high school, like I was. And then I was like coming into college wanting to be a different person. And so it was like alcohol just gave me kind of like a way to handle that, you know? Yeah. I mean, pretty much it was just social anxiety and not feeling comfortable with myself.
I relate to that a lot. So a drink gave you a sense of self-worth and self-confidence. Mm-hmm. What I'm hearing you say is it was like a social lubricant and it made you feel like you were deserving to be in these places or to embody this new person that you wanted to be.
Yeah.
College, a new chapter of your life, your opportunity to reinvent yourself. You had a short run, right? 18 to 23. So
right.
In order to stop, you must have had an awareness that something wasn't okay, that this was not really a sustainable choice for you. Were you aware of what the drink was stealing from you before you stopped? Or was it a forced stop that came at you kind of out of the blue?
You know, it was like a gradual awareness. I definitely had consequences immediately and continually, but it was just the gravity of them got worse and worse over time. And what I was trying to achieve kind of went away, because it got to the point where I had to drink by myself and hide it all the time. So it was like, I wasn't being social in my alcohol, you know, in my alcohol consumption. It was very much a isolated thing towards the end, and was not enjoyable for me towards the end either. But yeah, I had pretty severe consequences too. Like, I got taken out of college. I went to the psych ward. I had a DUI. I went to treatment like 2 or 3 times. So it was like kind of obvious, especially to those around me, that I did not drink in a normal way. But it took me a while to get to that point of like, I'm done, you know?
Yeah.
Other people saw it a lot earlier than me that I needed to be done, you know?
It's interesting because my story is actually is different than yours in the sense that no, like, people couldn't tell. But what we have in common is that at some point in our relationship with alcohol, the whole relationship got flipped on its head.
Yeah.
It used to give us the ability to go out and be social and to feel confident. And at some point, what you and I have in common is we started drinking alone, and it took away our ability to have social experiences and to connect with other people. So it's interesting to me because, like, people who, like you and I, have shorter runs with our relationship with alcohol or other substances, some of us have big consequences and some of us don't. But what I'm hearing from you and my story, the way we relate is, no matter what the consequences have or haven't been, if you can notice a flip in your relationship with a substance from where it used to help me in certain ways, it used to give me something, now it's stealing from me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we don't have to get to the consequences to realize that our relationship isn't a healthy one. Sometimes it takes the consequences to show us what needs to change in our life. But for you, it took a little bit of convincing. So what were your fears about getting sober that kept you in that relationship with alcohol for longer than was necessary?
I think it was like, I can't deal with what's going on in my head. You know, it was like, that I think was a big thing for me. Because I remember, I've been talking about this so much lately, but I ended up going out to San Diego, living with my sister. That was like one of the ideas of my family was like, go live with your sister. She's a good influence. Like, you'll get better, you know, if you live with her. So I did that. And that was like a dream come true. I'd wanted to live in San Diego like since I was 12. So I was like so excited, but I couldn't. And I had people that were like taking me to meetings and a really cool sponsor. Like, San Diego had a great 12-step program community. And it was just like, I couldn't deal. I couldn't deal with what was in my head, what I was thinking all the time, like the way I was thinking. And I couldn't even absorb what they were saying at the meetings. Like, it was just so loud. Like, it's hard to explain, but it was just like my priorities. I don't know. It was not feasible for me at that time. And I'm grateful for my journey and how it ended up, but it's just interesting to me, like, wow, that would have been a cool time to like really get it. And then you could have like built your foundation in California. That would have been so fun. But it didn't end up being that way. And I tried, but it was just, I couldn't prioritize it. Mm. Like, in my head, I still wanted other things more.
What was more important to you? Like, give me some specifics.
I think it was like having a relationship. I mean, I think it was like extreme codependency, wanting friends like that. I don't know. Cause it was like, I had friends that were in the program and stuff. I guess I just wanted maybe an old idea that I haven't let go of. I think it was maybe an old idea I had had of myself in college. And I was trying to kind of keep that up, and it just didn't work out, you know?
That's relatable. You know, I talked to a lot of people about when they realized they had a problem, and then whether or not it was that moment, they decided to stop drinking and Surprise. For the vast majority of us, just knowing that there's a problem is not enough for us to stop. You know, there are some very special humans out there that are like, I realized that it wasn't serving me anymore. Namaste, you know, like namaste sober. That's not how it happened for me. It doesn't sound like that's how it happened for you. There was this really like this internal battle of, but I can learn how to control it, or like maybe it'll be different next time. And it was fun at some point. Like, I know like that is an experience I had. I'm sure I can get back there. Not true for me. Sounds like not true for you, but it's amazing how we hold on to these ideas around what it was like or what it could be like in the future. And we're really giving away our present for this alternate reality that's really just living between our ears. I relate a lot to that. So when you finally got sober, perhaps, so it sounds like you had this period where you were, you know, trying to get sober, and ultimately in that time feeling maybe half in, half out, you were showing up, you were making some friends, but you just, for whatever reason, didn't have the ability to fully commit. You weren't really done. When you eventually got sober, and at the time you probably didn't know, like, woo, I'm in it for like 13 years, because Lord knows, we have to think about it in short periods of time to make it really feasible. At least I do. I have to think about it like, cool, today, and not think about, wow, when I'm 45, I'm going to be sober. So just for today, when you got sober for the first time, do you remember what that felt like? Did it feel scary? Did it feel awesome to be a part of a new community? Tell me a little bit about what you remember feeling about being 23, 24, 25 and sober when perhaps a lot of the other people out there weren't.
Well, at first I felt like, well, I was desperate enough to where I was like, part of me was like, I don't care. I'm just going to do what I need to do to get sober. Cause it was like, I wasn't clinging to much and I'll just see how this goes. I think that was like, I'm going to do what my sponsor tells me to do. I'm going to see how this goes. You know, this is how I'm going to be able to live. Cause I think I had gotten to the point where I was like, you're going to die if you keep like living this way. And so, but I was a little worried about like, oh my God, am I going to be this like really boring person that just like floats around talking about spirituality all the time? Like, it was just very foreign to me. But I'm really glad I had the sponsor I did, because she was really a real funny person. And I think she made it, and she said crazy things in meetings. And I just really liked that I could relate to some of the things she said. And so, and I liked her life too. So I was like, okay, like I'll listen to her. And in the beginning, I kind of was just rolling with the AA way of life. So I was going to these meetings. It was like a lot of old Southern men that had these phrases they would say every meeting. And it was great for me because my brain cells weren't, you know, I had killed a lot of brain cells. Like, it was nice to hear something very repeated, like over and over. So they would be like, I'm not going to drink today, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what. Like, just those like little phrases they would have were really helpful to me. So that was like the beginning, was actually just going to these meetings with old timers and like them getting me to chair the meeting and kind of getting me to like put my sea legs on, like as like a new sober person. But then I started to crave like peers, like wanting to be around people that were my age and wanting to see if that was even a thing. And my sponsor had another sponsee who was my age, and we had about the same amount of time sober too. So, and she was going to Vanderbilt like in grad school or something, but she started to be like, hey, I go to this young people's meeting, meet me there, then we're going to go out after. Like, she was really social. And so it was actually really helpful to me because she kind of like showed me like, this is where the young people are at. Like, this is what we're doing Friday night. This is what we're doing Saturday night. And so I'm really grateful for that because I got to see like, oh my God, this is not boring. Like, this is really fun. We would do like late night pool parties and like go like play games and go to all different people's houses and go out to get coffee or go eat. We ended up going to like a male strip club for one of the girls' birthdays. Like, it was just like legit not really that different from when I was drinking, you know, but we were just all sober. So seeing that, it was like being in college again, but it was just like, I'm sober and we're all sober. And conventions, like tons of conventions. I think that's the big thing too, is like, there's such a huge YPAW, like young people in AA, young people in different programs, like there's like organizations around it. So I'm glad I learned all of that and got involved. And then I was like, once I got to that point, I was like, okay, okay. This is the other thing too. I started art school as soon as I got sober. So I not only had the people I was hanging out with in AA, but I was actually hanging out with my art school people too. And they were super cool with my sobriety. Like I was very open about it and kind of just found friends that were like cool with it. And so I actually had a lot of fun. Like I was taking photos all the time and like hanging out with all these different people. And I was having way more fun in sobriety than I was having before I got sober. So that's basically the gist of it, was like, it was better than I could have ever thought, you know, in my mind.
Wow. I love that your story highlights that two things. There are a lot of young sober people out there. And for anyone who isn't familiar with the Alcoholics Anonymous program, or maybe has been to like a meeting and it just hasn't felt warm or like the right meeting for you, there is definitely not one way to get sober, but it is, I love that your story shares and acknowledges that there are a lot of different types of meetings. What was important for me in the beginning was to go where it felt warm. And I had to try a couple of different places until I felt like I could just sit down and let my shoulders drop and breathe and cry and like just be in front of other people. So whether it's a group of people who all identify as recovering, or it's you're brave and you tell your group of friends, new or old, that this is what I am doing now. I'm sober. I don't drink. And you just see if they embrace that or not. And then allow yourself to find those communities or people that embrace your sobriety and let you just sit and breathe and cry and be. There's a lot of community out there for us in the rooms and outside of the rooms. And one of my main encouragements for people is just like, keep seeking until you find that warm place, because it exists. Your story proves that it exists in many areas, right? Maybe in unexpected areas even. It can exist in a room with old men who are old timers and Southern, and it can exist in a room with young people who are younger than you, and it can just exist in a room full of artists, and it can exist in a room full of athletes. Like, it absolutely can exist in many places. Were there any specific cringeworthy moments in your 20s where you were sober that were kind of like the most challenging hits for you in your sobriety?
I remember when I got my dream job. So I graduated art school and I had been doing commercial retouching, and I had worked for Dillard's and I really liked that job, but they moved. But they told me, like, there's, you know, they do Victoria's Secret here. So if you want to try to go for that, like, it's this company or whatever. And so I got the Victoria's Secret job and I was like so excited. Like, that was like my dream of life, to retouch Victoria's Secret models, like Adriana Lima. I was like, oh my God, Adriana Lima. That was like my dream of life at that time. So I got that job and it wasn't as warmly received, my sobriety in that environment. I won't say I was ostracized. It wasn't that. I just wasn't like a part of, you know, and I did a really good job and I was well received in terms of my work, but I did not feel like socially really a part of that job. And some of it, I think, did have to do with just that I didn't drink, and some of them drank a lot, you know, and it was just kind of like one of those things.
If there was someone,
I stayed sober through that. I had a lot of community around me outside of work. So it wasn't like, and I even eventually had one of my really good friends from art school started working there. So it was fine, but I think it was a little weird. Like, it was awkward.
If there is someone sitting in front of you who is in their mid to late 20s saying, I work at this place, I do a good job, my job is safe, like people acknowledge that I'm a good employee, but when it comes to the social side of things, I feel like an outsider and like I just don't really feel comfortable. These are just not necessarily my people. And it's creating this sense of like discomfort for me. I feel like I'm left out. What advice would you give that person based on your experience of how to make it through?
My experience was I really leaned on my recovery in that time. So I like started a young people's meeting. I like called my sponsor a lot. I went to meetings as much as I could. And I was working like 80 hours a week. So I don't know how I was doing this stuff outside of work because it was like a lot of overtime. But I just tried to like make my time outside of work really filled with recovery. And that helped a lot. But eventually it got to the point where I was like, this is not a good job for me because for other reasons, not even that. But yeah, I mean, I just clung to what I knew had worked for me, you know, and to help me stay sober.
You're trying to find some sort of balance between this work world and your sober world, because your work world wasn't able to fulfill that, you know, recovery sobriety message for you.
No,
so you had to kind of double down and say, okay, my balance means then I'm calling more of my sober friends.
Right.
And I'm making sure that on the weekends, like I'm being fed sober talk and I'm going to the places or listening to the podcasts that remind me of, you know, what my life is and what's good for me, even if it's not necessarily what I'm seeing 80 hours a week at my job.
Exactly. I just had those people around. Some of them would even come like eat lunch with me. Like it was kind of like that. It was like, you just like cram it in, like whenever you could. You know, if it means like eating out on the picnic table with one of your like friends from your meeting or something, you know, like it was like that for sure.
That's awesome. So I want to transition to a little ping pong kind of rapid fire. So this will be just like whatever comes to your mind, a sentence or something. What do you say when someone asks, what can I get you to drink?
I say, can I get a ginger ale? Or do you have espresso? Do you have bubble water? That's what I call it. But like a LaCroix or something. But I have like a serious list of like all my non-alcoholic go-tos. So yeah, Diet Coke, LaCroix, coffee. And if I like ginger beer too, which is just like a really strong ginger ale.
Awesome. So during your sobriety, is there a particular new belief or behavior that has improved your life greatly?
Prayer and meditation.
What part of your sober journey did that really kick in, just out of curiosity?
I think it was always there. I was actually talking to someone the other day who had relapsed, and we were talking about what she had stopped doing, and she said she stopped praying. And I was like, yeah, that's the one thing that I have never stopped doing my whole 13 years. I've never not prayed. I think I've had one day that I didn't pray. So that's been consistent, but there's been a different level as I've gotten like more time, and it's almost like prioritizing it more and more. Like, you know, I'm going to pray as soon as I get up and like kind of sit for like 20 minutes and either do like a meditation of some sort, or just listen after I pray. So it kind of feels like a conversation in the morning with my higher power.
Beautiful. What is a myth that you've heard about sobriety, and what would be your comeback or response to that myth based on your experience?
Oh my God. The biggest one is just like, what is there to do? So you can't do it. There's nothing to do sober, you know? And like, you can literally do anything sober. It's just like, because you may not feel comfortable, that's one thing, but like you can actually do anything. Like, I mean, it's no different in terms of like, can I still go to the club? Can I still go to shows? Can I still go to places I thought I couldn't? Yeah, I could do all those things. I don't have an obsession to drink today. So that has been relieved. I have a spiritual connection that I can go do anything, you know?
Yeah. I love that. I love what you said is the most truthful thing. I can do anything now without picking up a drink. In sobriety, I literally can do anything. I might not be comfortable doing it. I might
have exactly.
to feel a little bit more than if I had that lubricant, but I can absolutely do anything. In fact, I would put a little asterisk on that and be like, I can do a hell of a lot more than when I was drinking before.
Yes. Yeah. Cause you don't have to recover nearly as much either, like recovering from like my hangover or something.
Yeah.
And yes, you're right. You might feel awkward as F, but that is okay. Like you learn how to get through it. That was like a big part of my getting sober too, was learning how to get embarrassed and like recover from that, how to be awkward socially and just, it's okay. You know,
how we finally learn self-confidence and self-esteem. But giving ourselves permission to go out and do the things and kind of fumble a little and realize that we're still totally okay and we are still enough. And it's like all good. Like that's where we finally find the peace that we have been yearning for so much, because we realize I can actually do anything. And I maybe all these fears that I've had building up over my life, maybe those can soften a little bit now because I have the experience and the evidence that I'm okay.
Totally. Exactly.
Over your sobriety, what have you become better at saying no to?
Everything. Anything. I'm so good at saying no. It alarms people how. So I work at a treatment center. I have to tell this story just because it was amazing. So I had to take the girls to a walk-in clinic because one of them had bronchitis, and we decided to go to Starbucks because it was going to be an hour for her to wait. So we go get coffee. We're sitting outside. They haven't been out of the treatment center in 2 months other than meetings. So they're just in awe of oh my God, we're at Starbucks. We're sitting outside. And they're oh my God, there's a big bottle of vodka at the next table. There was this homeless guy that was sitting there drinking vodka. And I was are you okay? And they were yes, we're okay. And then he gets up and just pulls up. He grabs a chair from another table and just sits down with us. And he said, have you guys seen the movie Sling Blade? And then I was oh no, this is not what we're going to do. And so I literally just was I'm sorry, we are totally going to have to get up and we cannot sit and chit chat. He kept talking. He was oh no, 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 I don't want to, and you have these social graces of I don't want to make this guy feel uncomfortable, but at the same time, I'm I have to protect these women and their sobriety. They cannot be talking to this guy. So I made everybody get up and just made us walk over back to the clinic or whatever. And one of the girls was oh my God, I cannot believe you just cut him off and made us get up. And she was you just totally showed me that it's okay to do that. You know, she was that was a big lesson for me to just know that I could just make someone uncomfortable and just walk away. And that was really cool, because that's one of the biggest things I've learned is I don't have to sit through severe discomfort to make someone else, a stranger, feel comfortable. So saying no has gotten much easier in order to have my boundaries and things like that.
I don't have to sit through discomfort in order to make somebody else comfortable. To me, that just sounds like self-responsibility. You know, taking responsibility for your peace and your life. And it's that is self-love. That is so beautiful to say, I'm going to give myself whatever I need in the moment to protect my peace and to maintain my sobriety and the life that I want to choose to live and so I can show up in a graceful way. And it's okay. It's okay to say no, make someone else uncomfortable. You don't have to say it meanly, but we can just say it, speak our needs, speak what's okay with us, speak what's not okay with us in a way that's just plain truth and not mean. And if it makes someone else uncomfortable, that's okay. Because what's important is how we are taking care of ourselves. That took me forever to learn too. I'm the biggest people pleaser ever. It was very uncomfortable for me to start saying no and, just speaking my needs, asking for help. But really, it's like teaching people how to treat us too. If we all consistently let people just have their way with us, because we give them the power to do that, how are they going to know that what they're doing hurts us? Mm-hmm. How are they going to know that the way that they're treating us actually isn't okay with us, or actually, you know, hurts us? Yeah, thank you. That was a beautiful kind of like realization and approach to taking care of yourself, being like working self-love. If you have a thought about alcohol, or maybe you've temporarily lost focus on your recovery, what do you tell yourself, or what action do you take to refocus?
Okay. So I've always told myself this, I don't know where it came from, but if I had a thought, like a fleeting thought of taking a drink, it would be like, you might as well go jump off a cliff. Like that is like what I've always said to myself. And it's true though. I might as well go jump off a building. Like that would be about the same amount of good that would bring my life. So I always say that. And then I definitely would tell my sponsor, like I saw my eyes lingered on this liquor store sign a long time today, or, you know, just any thought like that, I try to bring it to light because it just is not good for me to hold on to it, hold it to myself. That is a dangerous thing for me to do. So I definitely try to bring it out.
Yeah, use the community. When you're asked, why don't you drink? What do you say?
I typically say because I'm an alcoholic, or because I was a menace to society, or because you're just would thank me later for not drinking. I don't know. I try to be like pretty transparent, you know, like it doesn't go well. I don't know. Just there's a lot of reasons, but yeah, I'm mainly because I'm an alcoholic. I'm allergic to alcohol.
What advice would you give someone who is thinking about getting sober in their 20s? And is there any advice they should ignore?
I would give them the advice to go for it. I would say from my experience, it doesn't get better. So you might as well go ahead and start now getting your sober life on. And the advice I would say not to take is don't try to do it by yourself. Don't try to just like figure it out in your own mind. You can't fix a sick mind with a sick mind. Like I know when I got into the rooms, I had a sick mind. Obviously, I was talking about how it was what kept me out there, you know, and I needed people that were well to talk to me and to tell me how to think. People who had stayed sober, I needed to hear what they had to say, like their experience, what they thought, with how they lived each day. So it worries me a little bit when I see people that are like, I got this figured out because I read a book or something. I don't know. That would be concerning to me just because I know how my brain is. But at the same time, I don't want to judge. I know there's all different walks of recovery. So, but yeah, for me, I needed people around me that had done it and walk with me through it.
Yeah, I find it very helpful too to have people who can relate to what I'm going through in my relationship with alcohol, because I still have this relationship with it. I still think about it sometimes. I still create stories in my mind about how much my family drinks or my partner drinks. Like I can think, you know, it's interesting. Like you mentioned the physical allergy to the substance. And a lot of part of the dis-ease that I relate to so much is the mental obsession. Like I can find so many ways to tell a story about alcohol in my head. It could be, oh gosh, that glass of rosé that they're drinking out on the porch looks so nice. Like the whole environment that they have going, I bet they feel so relaxed. And I kind of like make a story up about that. Yeah. Or it's, oh, my husband's had 3 drinks tonight. Oh, look, he's going to pour his 4th drink. Oh, like, I wonder how buzzed he feels, you know, like, and you just like really obsessively think about other people's experience with alcohol, not even my own. And so I really identify with that, like a mental obsession. It can happen even if I'm not drinking, and to be able to talk to someone who has understood the physical allergy, and physical allergy in my experience, meaning just when we drink alcohol, our body responds in a way that is not healthy, or that is dissimilar to a way that someone that we'd call a normal drinker,
right?
How their body would respond. So it's so helpful to be able to talk to people who just like get that, because there are a lot of people in my immediate life, like my family, my partner, that don't have that allergy. They don't have the mental obsession. And so they just can't understand what I'm going through. And it's so nice to not be alone in that. Then this morning I had a good girlfriend come over, and I've had I had kind of a tough weekend because I went out on a girls' trip, which like is even a big deal for me, you know, just to like put myself out there and go away with a group of girls that I didn't know very well to a place and just be social for 3 days. Like that's a huge deal for me. Yeah. And it turns out that these girls really liked to drink. And, you know, not necessarily in a way that they would identify as unhealthy, but enough for me to get mentally obsessed about it. And so it was a really tough weekend for me. And my friend came over this morning. I just was like, I'm going to need like a 10 second hug, because I knew that she knew what that experience was like to me. I had called her that weekend and talked to her about what I was experiencing. And just the fact that I could connect with her and hug her and feel safe and feel understood and say, yeah, you know, I still have some like lingering emotions, even though it was 5 days ago. And she's like, I totally get it. Like, you're loved, you're okay, you're safe. It's everything's fine. Like, I totally get it. Even like that is invaluable to me. So I really second your advice to find community and not walk this alone, because the gift of a connection with someone who understands you is just one of the most precious things.
Oh my God. So necessary. I just needed that. I was so sick of people being like, why would you do something like that? You know, like it was just so much a questioning of why. And I like in the rooms, it's like, we know. I mean, it's like, well, you're an addict. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like there's just this, it's irrational. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just nice to be around people that they don't ask that, you know?
Yeah. We don't have to feel weird or crazy around people who, you know, think the same way as us or have a similar allergy than we do. We can just feel normal and like focus on the solution.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. This was so nice, Stephanie.
Thanks for listening to Sober Reference. We hope you found this content valuable and are leaving feeling inspired to drink less, live more, and meet your potential. You can find more cost-free resources on our website, www.soberreference.com. We hope that you'll connect with us on social media, search Sober Reference now, and look for our logo. Great job taking in sober positive content today. Until next time, this is Sober Reference, and we are so glad that you're here.